Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Down and Dirty with me. I'm Idaho Beau, and
I'm Vivacious Vic.
Yes, you are. And we have a very special guest today. He just happens to be my nephew, Adam Hahn, and he lives in Idaho as well. He's even further north than I am. And he's had a journey of basically homesteading, living sustainably, and all kinds of really fun stuff, things we've talked about before in the past. So I think probably the best thing to do is just get down. Adam, you want to say anything before we get started?
Hello, hello, Down Dirty. Glad to be on the episode. I'm sitting on my front porch on a beautiful evening here in North Idaho, and nice breeze, sunny weather, and critters around, and just happy to be on board. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
He has a great log home up in almost to the Canadian border.
I'm in Old Town, Idaho.
Yep. Right. I didn't know if you wanted to disclose that or not. Right. Literally, like down the road, about less than a mile, is the state of Washington. So he's way up there.
It's actually only 5 acres to the west of me. I got one 5 acre parcel to the west of me, and I'm in Washington.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, well, I'm going to come find you, so you don't even have to disclose anything else.
All right.
Maybe when you come visit in October, we can go up to his house for a day.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, I'd love to have you.
That would be fun.
Or more. He's got extra bedrooms.
I got a lot of extra bedrooms.
So now that we mentioned Washington, I know that you used to live over in Yelm, and you were actually in the military. You were in the Army for 25 years-ish.
22 years.
22
yeah.
years, retired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were Special Forces for a good deal of that. And
I will make a correction there. I was a Special Operations Support Soldier, so I was assigned to Special Forces units for a Special Forces Group, 160th SOAR, but I was a support soldier.
Very good. Good support. And you you had 5 acres there as well, correct?
Correct, I did. In addition to leasing 5 acres, catty-cornered to me of pasture land. And then my neighbor just to the west of me had about 4 acres of pasture land that I was able to use for my critters. So I had about 13 acres of pasture land I was able to use over in Western Washington.
Sweet.
So what kind of critters are we talking about?
Well, I started out with, I always had chickens, but started out with the chickens and went to cows and shortly learned to get away from cows and go to sheep and goats and dabbed in rabbits a little bit.
And geese and turkeys and
yes, I did. Yeah, I had a couple geese and a couple turkeys, and wasn't really big on them. A little annoying and messy, but I guess it comes with the job.
So you want to ask him any questions, Ms. Vick?
Well, I'm always curious when somebody gets really settled in and really, really moving towards personal sovereignty and sustainability. I always like to get a little bit of the flavor of how you made those choices. And it's always nice, I think, to have some of the failures as well as a lot of the successes, you know, so that people who are really embarking on any kind of property size, doesn't matter what size, you know, some of the pitfalls and the great aha moments of, wow, this is really happening and working, I'm always curious just to know a little bit of your story of how important that was for you, and then just some of your story. We
Yeah,
all love
so,
stories.
oh, absolutely. So I grew up in North Idaho. I joined the military right after high school, and like I said, did 22 years in the military. I've always been an outdoorsman, an avid hunter. Just love the outdoors. That's why, being from North Idaho, love the outdoors. My military service took me around the world to 24 different countries, approximately. And I finally got my station of choice, which was Fort Lewis, Washington. So it's on the west side. I've always wanted to be out west. And Washington State is an absolutely beautiful state. Love the Cascades. And I was privileged to stay in Washington State for about a decade, maybe a little more at Fort Lewis. And one of the perks of being in the Special Operations Unit. And sometime back, probably 2018, 2017, 2018, around my last deployment to Afghanistan, I kind of got on this prepping binge, and it kind of, I've always wanted property, and we had bought the property in 2016 before we went to Italy, or excuse me, I'm sorry, 2012 before we went to Italy. And so I came back, we had 5 acres. And I wanted to, everybody wants to have a couple chickens or a couple something running on their property. And then I started getting a little concerned with the way the world was going, and whatnot, and thinking, I have a family, I got 5 kids, a wife, a grandson, and I'm thinking, if the grid goes down or anything happens, how are we going to live? So I kind of started this journey on the premise that something could potentially happen, and I'd rather be prepared for something and it not happen than not be prepared and then something happens and that's kind of it. So you start looking at things as food stores and preservation, canning and storing up meats and renewable meat sources. Chickens are great, always pooping your breakfast. I've kind of gotten to rabbits because they breed like rabbits, and that's a good source of protein. And so I had 5 acres, and it was a perfect property. We loved it, and we bought it on a short sell, and that the property was rough, the fencing was rough, the house was rough, and we poured a lot of sweat, blood and tears and money into that property, flipped it, cross fenced it, outbuildings for the critters. Started out with besides chickens, started out with some cows. We got 3 cows, which were pregnant, so we had 6 cows there shortly after. And I had a lot of buddies that, by the way, if you want to chime in, just kind of cut in, because I'll talk for hours. I had a few buddies that actually talked to me about, why don't you go to sheep from cows? Why don't you go to sheep from? And so I started looking into it, and I came across a video of a lady who had both in large quantities, like 300 sheep and a couple hundred cows, and she had a pretty prominent ranch, and she did a cost analysis of sheep versus cows. And she, going from cow going from sheep to sheep from cows was like a 2,000% profit increase. And she kind of explained, started going through the whys. It's a 9 month gestation for a cow. The cow drops, and then you wait 2 years generally before you butcher it. Or sheep, it's a 5 month gestation. They usually throw twins, and then within 6 months you're butchering. And on top of that, you got the fleece you can use as mulch in your garden. You can use it in your hanging baskets. I'm going to use it to insulate the walls in my new little she shed slash greenhouse.
Nice.
So there's a lot of uses for it.
Wow.
And they don't eat as much. They're really hardy. Once a year, I got to put my hands on them to shear them and trim their hooves. They're good dual purpose. They're great tasting. They're all unvaxxed, ungrained, grass fed only. And everybody says they taste better than anything you can eat at Costco. You can milk them. I got a stanchion that I built out of old bed parts. I haven't milked them yet. I have a buddy I sold 7 sheep to, and they've been milking them, and they haven't bought milk
Wow,
since.
that's
Yep.
I never knew that.
Yep, absolutely. So I learned that, cows, they eat a lot. They tear up the ground really bad. You can't handle them. They're destructive. They rub and break on fence. So we butchered the 6 cows, and I bought sheep. Went to Montana, picked up a dozen sheep, a mixed lot, mainly white Frisian, and I had a Icelandic ram. and a little sulfic mixed in with them, and it's kind of been a mixed lot since. And been with sheep ever since. Have a couple goats, but they're more for entertainment and weed eating than I do eat goat, but I love goats. They have personality. Sheep are like seagulls, you know, mine, mine, mine. Just so I went with the sheep, and but the animal husbandry side is kind of one aspect of it, and then you got to think, what can I get out of the ground orchard? This house had five apple trees. I knew nothing about pruning trees. It had one pear tree that would, it looked like just a matted mess and probably never been pruned in his life, yielded very little. So kind of had to learn that aspect about pruning trees, when to prune them, how to prune them, and then getting a garden started. Had a pretty good sized lot. It was probably 40 foot by 40 foot starting out, and it was all 6 foot fence
Nice.
around it. We did a lot of work. We actually dug down about a foot and a half, removed all the topsoil. I laid chicken wire down to keep moles and gopher out of there, and then we backfilled it with drain rock, so we wouldn't have to worry about weeds. We wouldn't have to worry about mud because it rains a little bit in Washington, if Western Washington, if people have ever been there. And then I built my 4x8 potting or planters on top of that, beds, raised beds on top of that, excuse me, and had a great garden. We were really successful with it. We had the horticulture side of it, and water was another key aspect. If the grid ever went down, it's like, how are we going to get water? So of course I had a hand pump installed on my well head. So the grid ever went down, we lost electricity. Got to have water, right?
Sweet.
You
So
can't make coffee
smart.
without water.
Wow. That's wonderful. Wow. How long from the time that you got back from your land to the time that you're harvesting from your veggie garden, then you're harvesting sheep, that you said 6 months on that. But like, were you eating off your land? How long did that take you?
Really, it was, let me think. When we got back in 2016 from Italy, I really went to work, got the garden up. But the first thing we got in the ground was corn. A little bit easy. I didn't have to do raised beds or anything for that. Got the soil ready, and planted quite, I can't remember, it was years ago, how many seeds I put in the ground. But we yielded about 320 ears of corn in Europe. They are probably a good 10 to 12 inches. They're monsters and sweet and good, and prepped them and froze them. And throughout the year, we just ate on the corn. And then the rest of the garden kind of came in blotches as I finished. It's expensive. The wood was expensive. And so, like, you'd wait every payday and grab some lumber and slap it together and build another raised bed. Then you got to get the compost material and get it in there. So, the garden came in stages. You can't expect everything. They say Rome wasn't built in one day, right? So you just kind of got to do it in stages, and
Yeah, perfect.
it's actually better that way, because I am not a horticulturist. I love gardening. I love the challenge, but I will say I'm the jack of all trades, master of none. There's
Yeah, that's what I say about myself.
a lot of failure there, right? I mean, you learn
It can
through
be. Yeah.
through trial and error. You're going to learn.
Well,
And if
that's one thing that Bo and I stress, and some of our interviews, a couple of our interviews with Matt Denning, we stress one step at a time, and make sure that you're able to handle those first critical steps of planning your garden, planning where to put your orchard, planning how far from the house everything's going to be. And so that sounds like you intuitively knew that, and your budget. It's always a matter of budget for a lot of things that we want to do on our land. So that's right in keeping with some of the stuff that we've really highlighted in our podcast, is to just be patient, because when you're working with nature, you have to be very patient, because it dictates everything when you're working off the land.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think if I would have walked into a fully mature garden plot, it would have been overwhelming, being that I knew the concepts of, companion planting and rotating your crops, because Aunt Bo always gave me books, Gardening 101, and listened to a lot of her books, and I read into it, and I was like, man, there's really a lot more to this than just throwing some seeds in the ground and letting it do its thing. The fertilizers, every certain things want more water, some things like less water, different kind of fertilizers. And it was really a struggle for me, especially because when being in the military, always being gone, and then when I retired, I bought a semi truck, and I was on the road for 4 years, and being away so much, so trying to manage that. My wife, she really helped out. She took off the gardening, and she watered and fed the animals, but she was more the like to go out there and weed and work in a garden and all that stuff. But I understood it all. And it was a little bit frustrating for me, because I trying to put it in practice is a lot harder than just having the head knowledge of like, okay, I got to rotate the crops, and I got to make sure it's, they're paired right with certain kind. So
Right,
that's
right. With
that's
you're working with elements, and they don't always do what we want them to do.
So I think starting small and growing the garden was a better, better way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So
So
speak.
are most all of your vegetables in raised beds?
In Washington, they were, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned solar, so you've got solar, completely solar in your home and all of the electricity throughout your outbuildings?
Oh, no, ma'am. Nope. I don't have any solar for the house. I have a Jackery with 400-watt panels. That's about it for my solar. I do have a lot of solar panels stored up. I just haven't got to that that. To that point in my life where I'm doing it. And on the she shed out, when I finish the she shed, that's going to be probably have some solar panels on it, and I'll definitely harness the sun's energy out there.
So you mentioned I gave you a lot of books, throughout the years. Do you remember? I was just thinking about this today when I was walking Lily, my dog, popped into my head. I believe you were still in high school. You could have just been out before you went into the service, but I know that was really quick. But you started getting interested in horticulture, and I gave you my syllabus from my first horticulture class. Do you remember that?
I do. Absolutely.
Do you still have it?
I think I do. It's upstairs in my bookshelf with all my resource documents.
Can I borrow it back?
When you come over, we'll go up there and dig through my resources, see if we can find
Cool.
it. I usually keep all
Cool.
that stuff on the bookshelf. I don't like being having all my resources as digital copies. I like hard copies.
I do
Once,
too.
yep, because
Me
once they pull
too.
the plug, you still got something on paper.
I've
And
got a whole library of
And the
gardening and
whole,
plant books.
yeah, and the whole adage, two is one, one is none. So I got two of everything pretty much, except Aunt Bo's notes. So,
Wow, that's nice.
yeah. And then, of course, the other, area we kind of ventured off into was mushrooms and stuff like that. My daughter and I, foraging. My daughter and I took a mushroom class up in Northern Washington State, just to kind of get the basics of wild mushrooms harvesting, and how to identify them. We got a lot of resources. Enjoyed that class. I really want to, on this property, do a little mushroom farm. I had my lot thinned out for fire preventative, but I left a big patch here on the north side that's got a lot of shade. I get a lot of bolus and stuff that pop out of the ground back there. But I like to hang some hardwoods back there and start putting plugs in and start growing some moisture or mushrooms, a different kind of mushroom. I've never done it, but it's just an extra something we can do and use, maximize your space. Use it all.
Ah, nice. That
So,
sounds
can I
wonderful.
ask you about your sheep? I know that your family enjoys it. And do you actually sell any of your meat to friends, families, or your, I know you have a flock of chickens, maybe 20 or 25 or so. What about your eggs? Are you making a little bit of side money on that? Pocket change, as they say.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I sell my farm fresh eggs at work just to my coworkers, $5 a dozen, and I don't have enough to provide. They just want, just like every week, you got eggs, you got eggs, you got eggs, and I make enough money, with my eggs to pay for the food. and then feed us with eggs and then have money left over. So yeah, no, that is definitely something you can do to take care. If you can pay for your food, that's a win. I spend about $320 on a 1,000 pounds of chicken food every 6 months, roughly. And that's all paid for just by selling to my coworkers. As far as the sheep, yes and no. I've sold whole sheep, dead and alive. I've slaughtered them. I slaughter myself if they want them dead. I'll take them to a butcher shop. That's preferred. That's $100 to butcher a sheep. Doesn't matter how much it weighs around here. And I've sold live sheep to some people around here that want some live sheep. My wife and I just started butchering ourselves. We've done probably three or four sheep, and we're getting better at it every time. But it's not in what would be, you'd say a USDA approved facility. It's in my shop. So I'm a little iffy if I'm gonna sell that to just anybody, my friends, family, something like that. Yeah, I'll throw them a leg of lamb or something like that. We just vacuum seal it, weigh it, and put a label it and a date and stuff like that. But we're getting better. I want to make sure a lamb chop actually looks like a lamb chop before I take it to a farmer's market. You know what I mean? It might look a little rough because I got a handsaw. I don't got like a an electric saw that's making clean cuts. So
I love it.
that's learning progress right there. It's just something
That's so sweet.
I got about seven more lamb I got to butcher before November, and the reason I got to do it, they're all females I have left. And I have the rams separated because you don't want to breed them early. If you breed them early, then you're going to be dropping lambs in December. And that happened my first year because when I sold my property in Washington, I wasn't able to separate my sheep. They were all in that leased 5 acres. So they were breeding July, August, September, October. I had nothing I can do about it. So when I brought them over here, and it was a bad winter, it was 31 below. We were,
Ooh.
we were dropping lambs in the winter. So I'd always go out at night, and first thing in the morning I go, if there's any lambs on the ground, I made lambing jugs out of pallets and put a heat lamp in there, and they got in there until they're a few days old, and I let them out, and then just kept that cycle going. It was a real, I lost about five, I think, that year, because just dropping, not getting out there in time to find them before they succumb to the bitter cold. So
And you have a
yeah.
Tibetan Mastiff as their guard dog.
Oh yeah, so I have a Tibetan Mastiff, and
Oh, nice.
she's a gorgeous dog, one of the most expensive dogs on earth, by the way. I got her from a friend, he's a breeder, and he didn't charge me anything. And her name is Stormy, and she lives out there 24/7, 365. It doesn't matter how cold, whatever. That's her family. Even the chickens. If the chickens are fighting, she breaks them up.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, when I
That's
go out there to
wonderful.
slaughter, I have my 22. She knows what it is. And she starts corralling the sheep up and trying to herd them away from me. I mean, that's her
Coming for
family.
you. He's coming for you.
Oh my gosh, that is so beautiful.
But I reward her. I
Wow.
always give her the heart of the sheep to, as her,
Nice.
pay her for her services, because she's always on guard.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
So I was wondering if two things I'd like you to talk about before we still have time, but is your underground greenhouse that you built over in Yelm, and then also what you're doing as far as putting in a garden with your mulching and take it away from whichever one you want to address first, because I think those are both two very important and interesting things that you've done.
So I got the sunken greenhouse idea from Aunt Bo. And of course, being a prepper, I was totally into it because I'm thinking in a wintertime, I want to have the ability to grow year round, right? If you're going to have a little harder winter in Western Washington, I can plant grounds or vegetables in the sunken greenhouse. And the whole concept behind a sunken greenhouse, from my limited understanding of it, is the thermal temperature of the earth stays more consistent at ground and below ground level.
Right.
So
Absolutely.
I hired an excavator to come out, and he dug a hole 16 by 14, 8 feet deep. And of course, a ramp going down to it, and a lot of clay there. So the walls stayed up perfectly. It was beautiful, a beautiful dig. And then I backfilled it with 2 feet of drain wall, drain rock, excuse me. Because it rains a lot in Washington. I don't want to have a mud pit down there, and I have to wear waders going down to my vegetables. And by the way, that was plenty. I never had an issue with water in that greenhouse, never. So 2 feet of drain rock was perfect. So in theory, I was 6 feet below the ground level, and that's going to vary on your, on your, where you're located. Up here, that might not be suitable, deep enough. I don't know. I haven't dabbed it in Idaho, but your frost level is always a little bit lower, or here in Idaho versus Western Washington. So everything below the ground, the walls, I framed it. I did 90% of the work of building that 16 by 14, 22, 224 square foot greenhouse. I did about 90% of the work myself, framed it. I had to have some buddies come a couple times to put the walls together, and hang some polycarbonate, the long sheets on the front. But anything contacting the soil was the walls. I had corrugated aluminum, so I wanted to keep all the soil off my framing. I don't want any rot. That'd be a pain in the rear to go and try to replace studs or anything like that if it's rotting. So I really took the effort to make sure it was sealed from the outside. With that being said, dig your hole a little bit wider, just enough for you to get in there, because you have to get back there to put your corners on, keep the water out from going into the corners, and caulk it if you need it, whatever you want to do. You got, for me, about 18 inches. I was able to squeeze back there and, make sure everything is watertight. And then if it's above the ground, it was a polycarbonate. I painted all the lumber white, so it was very reflective, extra bright. I put in the automatic vents, so as the temperature rise, they raised up automatically. As it cools down, they dropped. And I put in a solar powered fan with a thermostat. So at a certain temperature, it kicked on, pulled the air through at a high level. And I had a vent at the door, which was below what would be the ground level. And so it pulled the cool air up and forced it out the top. And I had potting benches in there. I also ran an extension, and I put an echo dot. And the reason I did that is because I dabbed in, oh man, it's eluding me right now for some reason. Where you play classical music, Sonic Bloom, where you play classical music to your plants, and the whole premise behind
Yes.
that is the
I love
frequency.
it.
Yeah, is the frequencies of classical music, often found same in bird chirping,
Yeah.
opens the stomatas on the plants, which causes them to breathe more. And then when they breathe more, they grow bigger. And there's a lot of people around the world that's just very big, had been very successful with sonic bloom. So, I dabbed in it, and I was always away, so I did an echo dot, and so I was able to turn it on and turn it off while I was on the road and stuff. I did about 5 hours a day, and I did it for 1 year, and it was okay. I grew like a 12-foot tomato plant, and it was a lot bigger than all the, than the stuff outside. The yield was about the same, but I think that was me not being there to fertilize and take care of it as much as I ought, should have. But that's something I like to continue experimenting with, is some sonic bloom.
That's beautiful.
One of the things I really had to, I guess, a takeaway was filling in the sides. The pressure started causing my 2x4s in the greenhouse to bow. So I dug it out and I backfilled it with wood chips, just because they're a lot lighter, a lot fluffier. So lesson learned, when I build one here, I'm going to use 2x6s, so a little bit more sturdy, because that weight of that
Yeah.
soil on the sides really presses in. But I love the greenhouse. It was a
They have fairy lights in it, and it looks like you could go have a romantic cup a glass of wine with your lover in there. It was beautiful. It was
Yeah, it
absolutely
was. Oh,
beautiful.
nice.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
Yep, and I had a lemon tree that thrived in that thing.
Nice.
I had a beam that was up way above what I could reach. It would have been above ground level that ran. It was mainly to brace the center support, but I figured, well, let's just make that a shelf. So I put like a 1x6, or excuse me, like a 1x12, the whole length of it, 16 feet, and I put pots up there so I can want, things like that require a little more heat, like your eggplants and stuff like that, a little hotter up top. I put those up high, and I had a lemon, a little lemon tree that just thrived in that thing year round in
How
Western
sweet.
Washington. Yeah, so success.
Nice. That
It
is
was really
such a
hard.
great story.
That is one of the hardest things that I had to leave behind. I love the property, and I'm not going to get into politics or anything, but we left. It was the hardest thing to sell that property. I just couldn't live there anymore. The crime, the drugs, murder started coming into our small town. It just got really bad, and so that's why we decided to move to Idaho. So, I'm from Idaho originally, but
I know.
spent so much time there, and I had roots there, and I had a perfect property, and it was hard, but
It
that's
was
why we left.
absolutely gorgeous. It was, I mean, and the neighbor, I mean, it was like you were so close to the city, but it was so rural at the same time. It was so
Yeah.
beautiful. So
So
let's go
moving
ahead.
here. Yeah, so
Yeah,
moving here,
that's
right?
what I was going to say. So let's
Okay.
move over to where you are now.
Lot more challenges. Western Washington is very lush, and I loved it from a prepping standpoint because I'm a forager. I've got books, and I've just been reading up on it. And when I go out in the woods, you can eat that, you can eat that. All your ferns, you can dig them up, you can eat the roots, and it's just like I could probably sustain a quarter of our diet just on foraging Western Washington. All those things that people say are weeds, I can walk out my back field and I can make a salad, and a lot more nutritious than what you can find in a grocery store. So I'm real big on foraging. You get over here, it's different. They don't have all the same things. I've only seen very few of the wild carrots, the Queen Anne's lace here. They're everywhere in Western Washington, and I dig them up and eat them. It's like, wow, it's a carrot, you know? And very few over here. So it's a lot drier. So it's not as lush. You don't got as many of the items I was accustomed to seeing over there. With that being said, also, my garden. So I got a bigger plot here. I've measured out about 7,000 square feet plus
Holy,
the garden here. And that's not counting the orchard. That's not in place yet. I think gophers killed the one reindeer cherry I put in. That's another story.
Aww.
Yeah. So my challenge here is our well. I'm on a shared well, so I own the well, but my neighbor behind me uses it also, and we only get like 9 gallons per minute, and it's a 120 foot static level, and it's always running out. So like it's just a challenge to water my yard. So Aunt Bo sent me. She's like always sending me great things, and it's just like. This completely changed my life because I was really frustrated. Like, how am I going to water my garden? She sent me a video of a gentleman, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he came up with the Back to Eden garden technique. And it was basically using mulch, very heavy mulch. And he covered his whole garden because when he moved to a certain dry spot in Washington, he had the same thing. His well only produced a 1/2 gallon a minute. And he was a big gardener. He's like, well, how am I going to water my garden, let alone take a shower? So he walked out in the woods in a tree line, and he's like, he's a Christian, and he's like, God, how is all this thriving out here? Everything is so green. And he looked down, what he's standing on, he started just digging in the ground right there, and it's basically all mulch. It's all the dead trees and leaves and everything else, and everything under there was moist, black soil. And he's like. So he started experimenting with it, like different hay and straw and this and that. But he found the best thing was wood chips, and not something you buy at Tractor Supply. They got to be something from an arborist with different size wood chips so they don't compact. And so he started spreading wood chips very thick, like 10 inches, and it retains moisture really well, and it basically. Will just start turning into a tea because as all that wood starts breaking down, it's constantly leaching into the soil. And weeds, if they do grow, they come right out because it doesn't compact. It's not like soil. You don't have to rotate your crops because it's constantly leaching that tea into your soil, giving it the nutrients it needs. It's not starved of anything. And the pests are very few because the plants are so healthy and so full of water. It's like once they bite into it, it's like the water just like drowns them out. They don't sit there and eat on it. So it kind of solves all my problems here. I got horrible water. My soil is pure sand. I don't have a single rock, which is a blessing when it comes to doing a fence post because this property didn't have one fence post on it when I bought it. My daughters and I did all the fencing. We're still working on the two-thirds in the back. But when it comes to gardening, it's like it's just pure sand, dusty. No organic matter. So I'm like, I got horrible soil. I got great sun, And I got horrible water. So, you know, how am I going to deal with this? So my neighbor's got 20 something draft horses. So she gives me all the manure, compost, and aged manure that I need. So
Nice.
I've been running over with my tractor and putting it about 12 to 18 inches thick. And then I signed up on Chip Drop and I got one load from them. And then I just go around looking for free wood chips from people that got stuff from Chip Drop. And I just been bringing it and dumping it about another 12 inches on top of that.
Whoa.
It's going to take a couple
Nice.
years before we can start really using it to its effect. If I want to use the spot now, I can. I would just have to pull back the wood chips, put some organic matter in there, some compost, and once it starts growing, I can put some wood chips over it. So I just started. So more to follow on this. I'd love to be back on your show and talk
Oh,
about progress on
nice.
that later. So,
Wonderful. That's so great.
yeah.
Wasn't your that area that you live in, wasn't that a some kind of mining operation at one time? That's why it's so sandy there. There's no organic matter in the soil at all there.
I don't know if it's because of that. I know there's a lot of mining around here, and that's why there's arsenic in our water. But yeah, I'm not sure why it's so sandy in this area. It's kind of odd to me. You go down to Post Falls, Coeur d'Alene, and it's all rock and really healthy soil up here. It's just sand. So I have no idea. I just got to deal with it and, you know, find ways to work around it. Got good drainage.
Well, building soil is the most important thing we can do, no matter what, as
Absolutely.
far as being a gardener. So that's you're right on the right track, and all that wood chip starts creating that mycelium, which is just feeds everything.
And of course, I use my own manure, sheep manure. I make my own compost piles and I stir them and throw in the chicken poop and stir it. And then I take that out there and I'll spread it. So, yeah, I got a lot of options for that
Nice.
around here.
Very
Definitely.
nice. What are you harvesting right now? Anything?
Well, this was our first test trial this year in the new garden, so keeping it small. I don't know, the desire is to go out there and just throw a bunch of stuff on the ground and see what happens, but that's probably a little more of a challenge, not knowing really what it's going to do in the soil and the water, because of course the Garden of Eden, or excuse me, Back to Eden technique isn't really up and running yet. So we've done corn and it's great. I got a little corn maze out there. If you come over, I'll charge 25 cents to take you through the maze. My wife's got some beans in the ground and some, I think she planted her eggplant a little long or a little late.
She was saying that the other night. You've got tomatoes.
Yep, we have tomatoes. Those are in a greenhouse. I got a small greenhouse that came with the property, and I'm going to redo it. It's got some real aged plastic sheeting on the sides, and you know, it gets real dark and it gets ambient light, but it doesn't get sunlight in there. So I'm going to replace it with polycarbonate when I get around to it. I'm finishing up the fencing now with the garden. I just got the last of the fence posts this weekend. So I'll be finishing up the garden fencing. Keep the chickens out. That's always the challenge, right? They go and start
Oh
digging
man,
stuff
no
up and
kidding.
scratching and eating everything. Oh, like I said, I hate chickens, but I love them at the same time. They're
I know.
nuisance.
They're my favorite.
Chicken tractors.
But they do you yeah, you really got to keep your eye on them. They can just decimate something in no time.
Well, my plan is to do chicken tunnels around the garden. I have a separate chicken coop out there by the garden. And I'm going to put, you know, 10 chickens in there, and I'm going to have tunnels that run the length all the way around the garden to be the interceptor for insects, right? So as the bugs are
Nice.
crawling through, they'll be going around eating them and just, you know, do what they can to kind of just intercept the insects before they get in there and start eating my vegetables.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
So I got a question for you.
Okay.
What do you do in your spare time?
Well, I do have an expensive wife, and so I still work, and of course I have to work. I'm retired military. I got my VA disability. I make pretty good money, but we just moved to this property. Like I said, there wasn't a single fence post on there. We got to do greenhouses. We got to do gardens. Finish the fencing. The beautiful log home wasn't well maintained, so it's got to be media blasted, sanded, treated. About 8 grand for just two sides. So I got a lot of expenses with this place. So I still work 4 days a week. I work four tens, and but when I'm not working the job, I'm working the property. It's between that and vehicle maintenance. I've got an old Chevy that I'm restoring and stuff, and it's my bug out truck. But yeah, I'm always working the property, so I don't got a lot of spare time. The wife kind of complains because I'm a workaholic, and I am. I just love work. I'm happy putting my hands in dirt or inside of an engine or doing something with the animals. And she's more the one to go out and do stuff. And so I gotta have a balance there, but my heart's here working on a property. So I just enjoy it. There's a sense of satisfaction and reward. Seeing, I mean, we've already seen in 2 years, this place doesn't look nothing like when we bought it. So I'm real happy. I just like seeing, everything change before your eyes and all your hard work and effort.
Wait. And
So
what are your kids into this? I mean, how involved are they, or are they still living with you?
one of my daughter, I got five kids. So one of my daughters moved back recently because she was going to move to Texas and that fell through. And so she had already got out of her lease in her apartment. So she's home and I'm okay. I like having my kids around. And so she's just saving up some money to get out on her own again. And my kids, well, I'll say this, my daughters, especially my eldest, Erica, has been here, helped me do this fencing. I didn't hire someone to come out and do it. It was via my daughters. Did all this fencing, all the H braces, the stretching of the fence, the pounding of the T posts, all of it. So they're, I raise them right. They're hard workers. I wish they were more into it like I am, but I'm kind of a fanatic. My youngest daughter dabbed in gardening in a school, greenhouse in a school, and she really liked it. They're all preppers like me. They all got their boomsticks and their bug out bags, and they understand that I've kind of drilled it into their head. My eldest daughter's went to, like I said, to the mushroom course with me, and she goes some other courses, and we do training, canning, meat canning, and I was sending an email out or a message out to my kids and friends and family, and kind of get them together and just learn these skills, the lost skills that so many people don't have. Once you pull the plug, nobody knows how to live, right? You don't know how to preserve food or anything, and then panic sets in, and it's those who have these skills and are preparing for these things are the ones that will survive. So
Good for you.
that's what I want to instill in my kids, because they're the most important thing. I can grab a bug out bag. I've been to SEER school. I've been to survival school. I've been hunting my whole life. I can grab a bug out bag and I can disappear into the woods and survive or die trying. And I think I'll do a pretty good job, but they can't do that. And that was my mentality when I got into prepping. So getting their gear and getting them to enjoy stuff like foraging. Every time we take a walk, this is wild carrot, or this is wild lettuce, or knick-knick, or whatever it is. I'm just always pointing it out, saying this is medicinal, or you can eat this, because you never know. That might be a portion of their,
That's true.
their substance someday.
Go ahead, Beck.
I was just going to ask, what would be your advice for someone who has a strong desire to start somewhere to get prepped or really start figuring out how to lead a more sustainable life? What would you advise?
Well, it's kind of one of those things. A lot of people I talk to, and I've given classes on bug out bags. When I was a truck driver, I'd be around a Barrarella and a Texas Roadhouse in Bismarck, North Dakota, and I'd be talking about this stuff, and people are really interested. And some people were, I was on a dedicated route, so I'd always see the same people, and they invited me to their house. And I gave classes on bug out bags and stuff, and how to be prepared for certain things. And the biggest thing, a lot of these people live in the city, in this suburban area. And it's like you gotta find somebody outside the city. You gotta form a small group. You can't do it yourself. I initially thought I can do it myself, so I started a small group of people with different skill sets, a horticulture. I got a medical team, security team. I got my mechanics, my engineer, and people like-minded that's really takes it serious and really puts some effort into being prepared. like I said, if you never have to use it, great. But if that time, it, when a flag goes up or something happens, then you've at least got a running start in front of everybody else. And the most important thing is your gear, right? You got to have the gear and you got to have a place to go to. And it's not in the city. If I've always prepped for like kind of the worst possible scenario, an EMP killed our entire electrical grid. Navy War College did a study on this, and within 18 months, 90% of America would be dead because people can't live without electricity. It runs their water, it keeps their food frozen or cold, it pumps their gas, and people don't prepare for this stuff. They got their nice house with a white picket fence.
Flushes their toilet. They never think about that one.
Everything. So, prepare for the worst possible scenario. And it's kind of overwhelming to think about it. I tell them that. I said, yeah, there's a lot of gear you need, my friend, but it's never too late to start. You need a water filter. The grid goes down, and people, day one, I'm really thirsty. Day two, they're drinking out of puddles, they're drinking out of streams, the river. They get Giardia, other waterborne illnesses, and that's going to be the number one leading cause of death in this kind of scenario. So have a water, a life straw, or some other kind of water filtration system. That should be the first thing in your bug out bag, and then you plan for the season. So a bug out bag is important, and I'm always willing to help people get started with a bug out bag. And then having a place to go, and when you get to that place, who's going to be a part of that group? And you got to have a standard. I have, thousands of pounds of dry goods and foods and medical supplies and ammunition to defend it, because people are going to want your stuff. So that's some of the things you got to think about.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. It's all good information.
Some of the things I wanted to dab into also, Aunt Bo, you talked about running copper wire in the ground. What is that called again?
Electroculture,
Yep, absolutely. I'm going to be messing with that too. Kind of hit everything where I can and try to get the best possible, yield and the healthiest vegetables that I can.
So, when you come over to my place and pick up kombucha, I've got all those pots in the front, and they're pretty tight in there. I've got a lot of stuff out there. And the sprinklers, because I have a little bit of a lawn, the sprinklers hit the pots, and then I have to water the things they don't get. So it stays really moist in there. I've got a ornamental pear tree and a nine bark shrub. It's pretty got a lot of shade but sun at the same time. So I have a huge slug problem. Huge. I pick them off all the time, and I don't want to squish them or put salt on them, so I don't know if this is really any better. I just kind of throw them out on the sidewalk, so they have a long place to go to get, or a long way to go to get back to my plants. So anyway, long story short, I had one pot dedicated I wanted to grow green beans in. I plant the seeds right at the exact right time for my area, for this area. And they just start coming up, and lo and behold, they get munched to the ground. I did it three times. So finally, I thought, okay, I'm going to try one more time. And I probably put about, I don't know, eight seeds in there. And the one in the middle came up, and it wasn't getting munched, but all the other ones around it was. So I bought some copper wire to make some electroculture towers. Or wands or antennas or whatever you want to call them. And I thought, I'm going to try something. So I took a piece of wire and I made it round on right on the inside of this pot, and not one leaf has been munched ever since then.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's great.
The reason I if I'm remembering this correctly, the reason is because the copper creates, it's not that it creates an electrical feel, but it conducts electricity and they can't cross it. The electroculture, it Vicky's done it a lot. I still haven't made my wand yet. It's just my dog had surgery, so it's been a little strange lately. But anyway, Vicky, you want to talk about it? We still have about, I don't know, 5, 6 minutes left.
Yeah, any of the details like the right gauge wire, because I need all that information.
Well, I was doing this when I lived in Baja, and there's no hardware stores or anything that Well, there were hardware stores. You could get electric or copper pipes for plumbing and stuff like that. It was super expensive. So I went to the thrift stores and I got all these cable wires and I stripped the plastic off and I was harvesting the wire out of all the electronic stuff that is in the and I then I wrapped poles. I wrapped whatever kinds of branches I could get. Because there's no trees there. So, there's dead cactus and I found some people that had some bamboo poles and stuff, gringos that have bring stuff down. And I put them out. I did find one really long one and I made an antenna that was about 12 feet tall and it kind of had a curvy end and I wrapped that thing with wire and then I had kind of this netting stuff that came out of those wires that I was harvesting and I just wrapped that all over it and I stuck that out there and oh my God, we had just planted a bunch of citrus trees and those trees I can't believe how many bloom they bloomed all year long.
Wow.
And they had so much. They were lime trees, one two lime trees and a lemon tree, and they were just loaded. I mean loaded. And not really limes and lemons, the birds, they don't really drill the holes. They drill the holes in grapefruits and oranges and tangerines and stuff, but they don't do that in the limes and the lemons. We just had so many. And
Wow.
that was my first experience with electroculture. So I started, and Tracy was living there, and we started just any sticks that we could, we just wrapped them with our wire. And put them all over the place. And I had the most prolific garden in Baja with everything's hungry. Every critter, all the lizards, the snakes, and there's rabbits and all the birds. And I was able to have a huge harvest. And I do attribute it to the electroculture. Because I
Wow.
didn't, I mean, ev people are going, how are you doing this? How were you able to do this? And that's the only thing that I could really come up with that really helped deter the pests and no, we did not lose anything to rabbits, which is like unheard of. And there's a lot of rabbits there
Yeah.
in the desert. So I think you can't go wrong with it. You just experiment. And I was so into it that I went and visited a friend down in Bisbee by the huge copper mine down in Arizona. And I bought a bunch of, is it chrysocolla? That's the raw material that copper comes out of. And I bought a bunch of those and I placed those rocks all over the bottoms. So it's also copper energy. I don't know. I just experimented and had fun and I had great success with it.
Wow,
I think
I look
I
forward to
bought
it.
16 gauge. When you come over next time, I'll show you, or when I come to your house, I'll bring it with me.
Okay.
I eventually did go when we went to Yuma once. I did go to Home Depot and I bought about 50 feet of wire, copper wire, and made some more formal ones that I placed in all of our. We had a huge fruit tree thing and placed one in each tree, and we had these straggly little mango trees and stuff that shouldn't even have any fruit, and they had fruit come, It works.
That's good. That's a success story.
It
Experience.
channels the ether,
Ethers.
and the ether has everything we need to live on Earth. But there's actually five elements, and they removed ether. There's four elements, right?
Yeah.
Fire, earth,
Water, air.
fire, and air, and ether. But they have denied us studying, knowing, or using what's naturally occurring everywhere. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So It channels the ether down, and it's full of information and light and nutrients.
Awesome. Thanks for that story.
Well, we've got about a minute left. Adam, what nugget of wisdom would you like to leave us with?
I guess a nugget of wisdom I'd like to leave you with is I would say more on a prepping side. I would say, have a plan. It's never too late to start. Have a seed vault, have a water filter, have a bug out
Oh,
bag, and know somebody. Outside of town you can go.
you're my somebody.
Yeah, you are. Yes. In fact, Ampo is going to run my horticulture program if shit hits the fan. Excuse my language.
Nice, nice. The seed vault is
Yes,
so,
important.
so, so important because if you can collect seeds that are grown on your property, it's already those seeds are acclimated to your energy, to your soil, to your property, to your climate, and you're off and running.
Yep, 100%.
And we're off and running.
Oh, thank you,
All right.
Adam. Thank you
All
both.
right.
All
Thank
right,
you so
Adam, thank
much.
you so much. I'll
What a
talk to you
pleasure.
soon. Thank you, BBS, my
All right.
Thomas, Don, Doug, we love you all. Thank you, audience. We'll see you next in 2 weeks.
When will this show air?
This show is on the 30th.
30th,
Yes,
Uncle Augie.
not this
Okay.
Saturday, the Saturday after. I'll be in a little girl's birthday party and Adam will be camping.
Yeah. And
Every
every other Saturday we're on
other
BBS.
Saturday. All right,
Well,
guys. Love you
all
both.
right. Yeah. Cheers.
Bye.